In this podcast coming up today, we're going to be talking with Dina Griffin with Energy Performance Labs and Travis Mason. We're going to talk about metabolic efficiency, trying to train your body to be more fat adapted. But Travis taught us something very, very interesting and very good, that even though if we're fat adapted, we do need to have some of those quick burning carbohydrates in our diet. And he has told us, as we've known for many years now, that he prefers Tailwind Nutrition.
And it needs to be the right kind of carbohydrate, Scott. And that's what Tailwind Nutrition brings, the right kind. They taste good and they work.
You can be the most efficient fat burner out there and you're still going to be burning some amount of carbohydrates. So why not replace those carbohydrates with good carbohydrates that are not going to cause gut bombs? And that's what Tailwind Nutrition delivers.
And another thing we learned on this very podcast is there are times that you're in a slump, you're down low, you're in that dark spot, and you need to pull yourself out with some carbohydrates. And what better than Tailwind Nutrition?
And that's when Don Freeman takes a tablespoon and just throws it back into the back of his throat.
Scott, you would too if it tasted as good as Tailwind does.
Go to tailwindnutrition.com. And take the Tailwind Nutrition Challenge, which we haven't talked about for a while. Look that up. It's a really good deal. Or you can go to our partners page and link on over. worldcampus.psu.edu, a world of possibilities at Penn State.
Scott, I would love to be able to tell people that I'm a Penn State graduate. And you can.
You know, the days of getting up early for that class and going and sitting in a classroom and listening to a teacher, I think those days are over. You know, we can all take advantage of the internet and this distance learning and get our degree.
I went to Penn State and I live in California. I went to Penn State and I live in Alaska. It doesn't matter.
And Penn State has it figured out. They have been ranked. They have the most top 10 ranked programs in the U.S. News and World Report's 2017 Best Online Program Rankings. They have 125 graduate and undergraduate degrees and certificate programs. They got it. You need to go check them out at worldcampus.psu. That stands for Penn State University, Freeman. psu.edu. Ultra Running Magazine. It's the Bible of ultra running.
If you need information, you've got to have a reliable source. Sure, you've got this podcast, but sometimes it's nice to turn a page and actually look at some information.
They have some of the industry's leading athletes and personalities that write monthly articles that are entertaining and informative.
You know, I love the articles, but you know what? I'm such an enthusiast about our sport. I even love the advertisements. I just love it all.
I'm always looking for new gear, and they have good advertisements in there. You're right, Freeman.
It's a trail running magazine written by trail runners.
And that's what you want. You don't want to read any magazine by posers.
Heck no.
And if you go to our partners page, there is an Ultra Running Magazine link there. If you click on that, you can get an annual subscription for a mere $29.95.
That's delivered to your doorstep.
With love.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
The problem with the message above is that it flies in the face of what we know to be true.
No, I've listened to your podcast for many years, and it's, yeah.
No, Frank.
I do own my own bar. every Friday morning on I Run Far, we open up and open up the taps.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
I'm not Don Freeman.
Scott,
I can't even remember who I am.
That is fantastic.
I'm Scott Warr. Hey,
perfect.
And today we have our Ask the Coach Travis Macy on a full podcast. I don't know whether he's going to be able to do a full podcast because he's used to doing like the 2-3 minute mini podcasts at the beginning of our podcast. But Travis brought up a little while ago some tests that he did at a local place, and we thought, hey, let's get him on the line and talk more about that. And he invited a secret guest that he's going to introduce. So Travis, welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Scott. I also am not Don. I'm still Travis, and it's always good to be back. We've done a couple of these longer sessions with you guys in addition to the shorter Ask the Coach, and always just enjoy being here. I love the Trail Runner Nation community. I love hearing from the listeners, and it's just a great synergy. So I'm glad to be back. And as we were chatting, I was just thinking that Dina Griffin would be a great guest. Dina is someone here in my area. We're in Colorado. I live in Evergreen. Dina lives in Boulder, and Dina is one of those people who has like so many official letters after their name that you can't remember them all. I know that she's a dietitian. I know that she's got a master's degree, and then a whole bunch of other things too. But you know, basically, she's an exercise scientist, who's done a lot of research for a long time. She works with a company called Energy Performance, based here in the Colorado Front Range. Some people may have heard of Bob Sibahar, who I believe started the company and is now Dina's colleague. And they just do great work, I think, with not only athletes around here, but also, you know, really athletes around the country. One of the guys I coach lives in Indianapolis, and he's done some testing with Dina, you know, on a couple different things, metabolism and salt sweat testing and that kind of stuff. And anyway, I was just really impressed in working with her last month to do some testing myself. So anyway, that's a little bit about Dina, and I'm sure you can tell us maybe what those letters mean, or, you know, what you really do. But I really enjoyed working with you when I did that test.
So welcome, Dina. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm honored to be on with you three amazing fellows. And I've been a Trail Runner Nation podcast listener for several years. And I've followed Travis, his adventures and things as well, and read his book. So to have all three of you in my presence, I'm very honored, and I'm excited to talk about the topics that we have planned.
Well, great. You know, the first question I have is for Travis. I mean, Travis, you've been doing this for a long, long time. What finally motivated you to go in and have this test done, or these tests done?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, really the last, probably, I don't know, 2 years, really, I've learned more about, what does it mean to be metabolically efficient, and how can we encourage our bodies to burn more fat when we're out doing an ultra run and in our training, and how can we burn fat at a higher level of exertion. And so, you know, I kind of, you know, your podcasts, other podcasts, various resources, talking to, you know, I'm lucky to be friends with a lot of men and women who are top ultra runners, you know, and talk to them. Hey, what are you eating? What do you eat during races? What do you eat, you know, outside of races? And so I just, you know, kind of kept, learning more about this idea of maybe the things that we eat can, have a big impact on our training and racing. And it started when Scott Jurek's book came out. Was that 4, 5, 6 years ago? You know, at that point, I was like, oh man, boy, a salad, that can actually be a meal. You know, that was kind of my first step. So, you know, thank you, Mr. Jurek, on that. And then, you know, kind of building from there, and then eventually learning more about, you know, hey, maybe I can eat less carbohydrates and more fat, and what impact is that going to have? So anyway, learned about that. And then a little over a year ago, I kind of made a shift in my own diet. You know, what I don't like to think of it as a diet. I call it an eat it, because it's what you eat. You know, you tell yourself, Ron, you're on a diet, then it sounds really restrictive and you got all these rules and stuff. It's just, you know, what is it that you eat? So I changed what I ate. And, you know, at that time I thought about doing one of these exercise metabolism tests, and in hindsight, it probably would have been pretty valuable. I wish I had the data prior to the dietary shift, but you know, I kind of thought about it, and you know, I'm like everyone. I mean, you know, I have kids and my family and work, and you know, you got all this stuff going on. And I just kind of didn't get around to it. But then, you know, as this fall went on, you know, really a lot of it were a number of my clients were kind of, you know, talking about this, asking about it, you know, learning more about it. I talked to Bob, you know, about his work and just read more about it. And I was like, hey, I need to finally, you know, get this done. So, you know, Dean and I scheduled it and went in there and got on the treadmill and hooked up this funny thing to my mouth that I breathed into for a while, and we did it.
You know, there's a lot of great testing out there, and for me, there's some confusion, and that's what we're really trying to do tonight is bring Dina in to help her clear some of the facts up here, so that we can learn what might be good for us to test, and what kind of results we can expect, and how we can use them to make us better runners. And I know when we start out, and as we're kids, we do some testing on our own. We look to our right and our left, and I'll bet you that you can name or at least know if you were the fastest kid or somebody else was, or where you lined up in that list of who's fast and who's not. I think that was our first form of testing. And then after that, maybe we looked at the clock and we looked at a watch and we said, how fast do I run around the track or from point A to point B? And then maybe we raised the level and we had a heart rate monitor. And then we looked down at a heart rate monitor and we determined, hey, how were we doing there? That was more sophisticated than looking at the clock. But after that, there's a wide open field, and we need somebody like E-Energy or Dina to help us through to find out how we can read our body, learn our body, and ultimately become better runners from the information we receive. So Dina, we're looking to you to help us learn more about these tests and how we can use them to become better runners.
Yeah, it's a great topic because there are so many different kinds of performance assessments, and we have different ways to interpret the data. And I should just clarify that I'm not an exercise physiologist. I'm more on the nutrition science side. But in working with Bob Sibahar, who is both a sport dietitian and an exercise physiologist, I've kind of learned over the years the differences in these tests. And we specialize in this testing that Travis just had done in January, which was the metabolic efficiency assessment. And so maybe we could just start with that one.
Yeah.
Travis just experienced it and can speak to it personally. You know, and even though it is an exercise test, it really is a nutrition assessment. Because even though you're exercising, what we're doing is looking at how your body is using fat and carbohydrate at different exercise intensities. Mm-hmm. And prior to maybe 5-10 years ago, we used to think, based on the research that had been done, that this way of using your energy substrates or your body's fuel sources, carbohydrate and fat, that was strictly exercise induced or influenced. So aerobic training, in other words.
Can I ask a question? So when you say carbohydrates and fat, are you talking about things that we're actually eating at that moment, or fat that's fat that's already in our body that we're using as fuel versus something we're putting in our mouth? Give me that clarification.
Yep. Perfect. So, I mean, you can look at both, but for a proper baseline assessment, we want to have the athlete fasted. And so what we're looking at is that energy pool of stored carbohydrate in the body coming from glycogen in the muscle and the liver, which is actually a really limited energy source. So for Travis, he may be able to store a couple thousand calories of glycogen or carbohydrate. And then fat is that other energy source. And even though, and if I can say about Travis, he's extremely lean, but he has probably 30,000 calories of stored fat that he can mobilize during exercise without even eating. Mm. And he may have more. So depending on your body composition, we can teach the body to more efficiently pull from those fat stores at rest. But for us ultra runners, we want, and we can talk about why, the benefits here coming up, but to be able to pull from that very vast energy source has so many health and performance implications. So for Travis, we can say he's a good fat burner. At the exercise intensities we tested him, he was using a very high proportion of fat. And he hadn't eaten for 11, 12 plus hours. But this was a reflection of his eating patterns over the past year in conjunction with how he trains as an athlete.
Does that make sense? Yeah, perfect sense. And okay. I want to ask this question if it's okay. Travis, were you working on this to become a fat-adapted runner, or was this just good, just circumstance and happenstance? Or was it genes? Yeah, yeah.
No, I was absolutely working on this. Yeah, this was, you know, kind of, like I said, about a year ago. It was really January of 2016. So I had done the Hurt 100, you know, tough 100 miler in Hawaii. And, you know, I had an okay race, but it wasn't the outcome I wanted. You know, I went there and you know, I was trying to win. And I kind of, you know, I was in the hunt, you know. My strategy on an ultra, like if you can kind of be in the where you want to be in the field, like with about 25 to 30% of the race to go, and you can be feeling pretty good, like that's when the race starts. You know, you take care of yourself for 75-80 miles, and then you race. and so I hit mile 80, and I'm like, I'm feeling pretty good. I think I've taken care of myself, and so I start racing, and instead of I think I was in, you know, third or fourth, you know, right in the mix. And I'm like, you know, this is perfect. I'm going to hammer it in. And instead of hammering it in, I like basically went backwards, you know, I really kind of, you know, and I ended up, you know, I connected with Nicodemus Holland, who maybe you guys know, he'd be a great podcast guest as well, you know, awesome guy, really experienced runner. And we were both kind of, you know, falling off the edge of the cliff here, and we became a team, and man, we made it through that last 20 miles together. And, you know, we got to the finish line, and you know, that's what an ultra is about anyway, is getting there. But, you know, kind of in reflecting, I sort of realized, like, you know, okay, maybe this race was, you know, in Hawaii, it's obviously much different conditions from Colorado in January. But even that said, I think something's a little off in my nutrition, and, you know, really, as I reflect, I'm like, wow, you know, I'm trying to take in like 300 calories an hour. What if I could race on like 150 calories an hour, or 125, or something like that? And really, that right there was kind of the impetus of like, you know, man, if I can make my body more metabolically efficient, that means I can take in less calories per hour in an ultra. And then as I got in, you know, I had read a lot about this, and I knew that in order to make the transition, I couldn't do it in a heavy training period. I knew that kind of, you know, a post-race period of recovery would be the time to do this transition. So I was like, all right, I'm just going to do this, you know, and I talked with my wife about it, and, you know, she really liked the idea of, you know, let's eat more vegetables, more salad, you know, less carbohydrates, you know, less processed food, less bread. And, you know, so, you know, we embarked on this together, and really that was, you know, basically the last year was doing a lot of that. It was very intentional, very, you know, not dogmatic about it, you know, not counting calories, that kind of stuff, but definitely, you know, really trying to make progress in this area. So yeah, I don't think it was by luck. And even as I told Dina, you know, this test, you got to be fasted for, you know, don't eat between, you know, don't eat after dinner the night before. I mean, if you would have told me that 2 years ago, you can't eat anything since dinner, and you're going to come. I was telling Dina, I was like, I don't even think I could have driven to Boulder. You know? I don't think I could have gotten in my car and driven an hour without, like, you know, eating my oatmeal. And, you know, here I was, like, you know, I drove there and I'm like, whatever. And I warmed up, I think, for like half an hour or 40 minutes, because that's just how I wanted to do it. And then I got in the test, and, you know, and I felt pretty fine. So.
Nice. You know, Travis, I think you made a really good point there that I think could be a hurdle for many runners that are trying to adopt this new kind of eating pattern. And that is, we're married or in a relationship or have family with kids. I mean, kids don't like vegetables. They don't like salad. At least mine don't. And and to drastically change what you're putting on the table can be really difficult unless you have the support of everybody around you.
Yeah, and I'm the first one to say, like, you know, you don't want to do something that's going to add more stress to your life. You know, whether that's, you know, diet or whatever, because if it's adding too much stress, then it's, you know, counterproductive. But, yeah, you know, I mean, probably our kids are eating more veggies, but they still eat mac and cheese sometimes. And, you know, I don't prepare it for myself, but I might have a bite of theirs just, you know, because I'm hungry or curious about what it tastes like, you know.
You forgot. It still tastes great. Okay. It still tastes great.
I mean, it still tastes pretty much the same, but, yeah. So yeah, I know, and that especially for me, you know, having a family is a lot of, you know, let's not be super dogmatic about this, and, you know, have some flexibility. But especially, you know, meals, my kids are at school, I'm preparing a lunch for myself, or, you know, preparing my breakfast. Then, you know, I can fix exactly what I want, and, you know, something that fits really good, and then mostly for dinner too.
Hey, Dina, tell us, what is involved in the metabolic efficiency test? What he's warmed up for 30, 40 minutes, and then what do you do? What do you test?
Yeah, so the typical warm-up, because I think Travis maybe isn't the typical athlete, but the typical warm-up time is around 10 to 15 minutes or whatever the duration of time that athlete prefers, just to get blood flow going and feel loose. And then depending if we're using bike or treadmill or both for triathletes, there is the metabolic cart that will be measuring the athlete's respiratory gases. And so our setup involves a mouthpiece and a nose clip, so that, and then there's a tube that connects to the a mixing chamber that will analyze carbon dioxide production and oxygen consumption. And so the cart really does all of the hard work in terms of figuring out calories being expended, you know, the percentage of calories that come from fat versus carbohydrate. But it's different than something like a VO2 test, VO2 max or VO2 peak test, which I think is a source of confusion for a lot of athletes. So the metabolic efficiency testing is a very, it's supposed to be very sub-maximal in effort. So we start very easy, very conservative in pacing for our runners. In fact, sometimes the first, you know, 10, 20 minutes is walking or hiking, depending on what we're looking for in terms of a grade change. And then easing into running and spending at least 4 to 5 minutes. That's the range of time spent at each pace. And then we just do a very gradual, you know, increase, maybe 0.2 to 0.5 miles per hour change in pace per stage. So the whole test could, you know, last maybe an hour or so, depending on what we're looking for and what the athlete's goals are. In contrast to a VO2 test, which is very hard, it ramps up the intensity every 1 to 2 minutes. And so the point of that test is to figure out what's your genetic potential. You know, how much oxygen can you deliver at the highest intensity, and what's your peak oxygen capacity? So that's more of a, you know, performance assessment. It really doesn't tell us much about your nutrition or your training. It just tells us, like, what your performance capacity could be. And so that's used more now in research, or it should be anyway, just to set standards for research design.
And Dina, VO2 max sounds very interesting for the laboratory, but it doesn't mm-hmm. sound like it applies to the ultra runner or the trail runner that's looking to become a more efficient runner. And let's give you some kudos for you're an ultra runner yourself, and you've completed Leadville 100 mile run. So you know what it's like to be out there and know what it's like to go the distance and have proper nutrition and go through the bunks and the lows and the highs. So you get all of that, which is very important when you go to somebody that's testing or sharing information about testing, that you know what it's about. And I think that's important. So Thank you for saying that.
Oh, yeah. I try to live in my athlete's shoes. So mm-hmm. I've done Ironman and different distance cycling events, and running's my current favorite. So definitely I like to experience, although I have to admit I'm more bonk free now that I understand how to eat properly with all my nutrition science and things over the last 10, 12 years.
Well, that's why you're on the podcast, Dina, because we want to be you.
I did want to add to your comment earlier to Scott and Travis, you know, the eating pattern, the beauty of metabolic efficiency eating or eating to teach your body to burn fat better is that we have so many strategies available. And so there are extremes, or maybe that's not the best word, but we have very low carbohydrate, high fat eating patterns that are difficult for people who have families or very busy lifestyles to implement that sustainably. And then we have this middle of the road. If you think of the bell curve, you know, we can go one extreme or the other, or we can find strategies that work for that person's lifestyle and work life and training schedule. And so I think that's one of my specialties as well, is just trying to figure out, you know, what are the tweaks that we can make to all of the times you eat every single day to make these long-term effects. And then how bad do you want this? If you are someone who suffers with GI distress, or you're having frequent energy lulls and you just can't get your nutrition figured out, I think at some point it's worth overhauling your nutrition to reap those benefits.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Dina. And I think one of the things that I've, you know, learned as I've been on this path over the last year, whether it's talking to people like you or talking to, you know, other runners like Jeff Browning and Jason Schlarb, those have been, you know, two guys who I consider friends and have really helped me, you know, just sharing their story. But it is exactly that, you know, I don't, like I said, I don't count calories. I don't count carbohydrates. I'm not, you know, trying to, you know, be on this ketogenic diet. You know, I'm not trying to have, you know, often in literature, they'll say less than 50 grams of carbohydrates per day will, you know, keep someone in this nutritional ketosis. And, you know, kind of when I first started, I thought, oh man, that maybe that's like the holy grail. And then I just sort of realized, you know, kind of like Scott said, like, you know, that's probably not really sustainable and may have some downsides. You know, it can be risks of if you're training too much and not being fueled, you know, for overtraining, injury, those kind of things. And, you know, kind of what I've, at least at this point where I've landed at is, you know, thinking more about my current training and racing, even on a daily basis, and how does the diet fit that? So, you know, like the last few days happened to be, I had pretty easy training days, and I don't think I really ate any, like, you know, large carb specific sources. It was, you know, like I said, a lot of, you know, salad, meat, cheese, little bit of fruit, nuts and stuff here and there. And then today I knew I was going to do like a big ski mountaineering day. So the night before I ate a little extra carbohydrate, you know, we went to Tokyo Joe's. So I got something with brown rice, which I usually wouldn't get, but I knew that I had this, you know, larger session coming up. So I ate, you know, I wasn't carbo loading, but I ate a little bit of, you know, carbohydrate. And then I woke up this morning and I had a little bit of carbohydrate this morning. And then I had some, you know, this is, I don't know, probably 3 hours of skiing at a high intensity level, you know, up and down hills, at high elevation. So I took in carbohydrates during, and then even afterwards I ate some, you know, with lunch as well. So in that way I was cycling the food to match with the training. And I think that's something that you can, you know, again, that may or may not fit your lifestyle or whatever, but that could be something to consider if you want to.
Hey, Travis, can you share with us when you say I had some carbohydrate in the morning, what are you talking about? How much and what did you have? And then some carbohydrates out there, you know, as you're skiing, give us, because at least I thought, what the heck is he eating? Maybe there's a thing to say.
No, that's a great question, Don. And I think, you know, really at this point, my typical breakfast, like usually in the morning, I'll eat two or three fried eggs. You know, I'll put a piece of my son Wyatt and I, we like the, he calls it spicy cheese. It's, you know, just cheese that has like jalapeno peppers in it, or yeah, or a the habanero cheese, if you can get that, man, that's like you know, so I do that. But then, you know, I'll put in some coconut oil, some olive oil, usually avocado, and then put that on top of some salad. You know, so usually that's what I have in the morning. And that, you know, there's some carbohydrate in there with the salad and stuff, but really there's not a lot of carbs in there. Whereas, you know, something like this, and this morning, or maybe even a race morning, maybe it's banana with peanut butter. You know, maybe it's like, you know, especially if, you know, I'm up early and maybe driving to the race, maybe I'll have a Clif Bar or something like that. You know, maybe I'll have, like this morning I had, some Yucan. I had, you know, like one scoop of Yucan, in water, and that's a very slow burning carbohydrate. And then when I was out, on the ski session, I was really working on my nutrition and gear for an upcoming race called the Elk Mountains Grand Traverse. It's kind of like the ultra run of ski mountaineering. It's mm-hmm. this, nighttime, you know, I don't know, 40 miles or something, from Crested Butte to Aspen, kind of through the Elk Mountains in Colorado. You start at midnight, so you go all night long.
Nice.
Super cool, but it's kind of like an ultra run. You got a lot of gear. You got to have your nutrition dialed because it's unsupported. So, you know, you got to keep your water from freezing, that kind of stuff. So, so I was doing Tailwind today, which, you know, of course we've talked about before, you know, so I had that in my bladder and I was, you know, taking in, I don't know, maybe probably something around 100 calories an hour, of Tailwind, you know, during the training. So that gave me, you know, a quick burning carbohydrate source and some electrolytes in there as well. And then, afterwards, I think I, you know, I really like, the Epic meat bars. Oftentimes I'll have those after a heavy training or something, but I was out of those. So I think I, had another Clif Bar or something on the drive home. And then I got home and I had a salad, you know, with some meat on it and some more coconut. I do a lot of coconut oil. So some of that, and, you know, like I said, kind of more right around that training, a lot more carbohydrates than I usually take in, but it was a long session. It was also a high level session where my heart rate was really elevated. And I know based on the testing I did with Dina, you know, I know that I was burning through a lot of carbs, so I wanted to replenish those.
And so, I didn't hear mention of any processed foods. You know, there's carbohydrates and then there's just good carbohydrates. I didn't hear a bunch of like a peppermint patty bar. I didn't hear that.
I don't think I've ever had a peppermint patty.
You know, Travis, don't
Snickers.
Start. Don't,
a Snickers.
Don't start.
I've had a Snickers. Yeah, I've eaten a lot of Snickers in races, but yeah, but yeah, I mean, it, you know, I mean, during race, where I eat a Snickers, yes, absolutely. You know, it's a good quick carbohydrate. Sometimes you got to eat stuff that tastes good, but yeah, I think at least for me, a lot of the round the clock diet is removing processed stuff as much as possible. I mean, I used to eat a ton of chips. Like I still love chips, but I don't really, you know, I eat a couple of chips every once a month or I'm at a Mexican restaurant or something like that. You know, but things like that have pretty much been removed from my diet.
Hey, can I put a pause on this great conversation with Dina? I know you have so much to share, but I this thought came to my mind. Is there ever a time in a race, Travis, or and provide your expertise here, Dina, and your experience that you say, you know what, I'm in a bad spot. I'm down. I need to grab that Snickers bar and I need to eat that thing and just choke it down because it'll bring me out of this space because it's not poison. It can be a silver bullet. Is there any truth to that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, not necessarily specifically a Snickers, but something.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I remember 100 miler I did. I mean, my pacer was force feeding me Cheetos. Like, you know, we both knew I was in a hole. And thankfully, you know, this is, again, kind of prior to my, you know, dietary shift. Hopefully that won't happen again. But, you know, it's happened multiple times. But anyway, I was in a hole, and you know, that's a great thing about having a pacer who knows you and also who's been out there, you know, himself or herself, and knows how to help fix you. Cause I didn't want to eat anything and I wasn't feeling good, but, you know, and I knew subconsciously that I had to eat. And thankfully I had someone who's, you know, literally running next to me, shoving Cheetos in my mouth. And, it brought me back. So hopefully, you know, the idea is, you know, hopefully maybe through some nutritional work, this kind of stuff, maybe we can avoid, you know, those real lows where, oh my God, if I don't eat something, I'm just gonna, you know, crawl in the ditch or whatever. You know, hopefully we can avoid that. But that said, that's why you do an ultra run, because you put yourself on the line and it's going to be tough and you're going to have to figure it out. And maybe you're going to have to eat Snickers or watermelon or M&Ms or, you know, quesadilla or avocado or, you know, the Leadville mountain bike ride, one year I didn't find my wife at the aid station and I was like racing hard and I just left. And then like 2 miles later, I'm like, oh my God, I am completely out of calories, you know, but I wasn't going to turn around. So I just kept going and it's hot out. It's, you know, I think it was like, you know, kind of that barren wasteland. You're trying to get back to power line on the way back and whatever that is, mile 60 or something. And I'm riding along and literally about to tip off the bike. And I look ahead and there's a gel flask. It's been baking in the sun. Oh. You know, it fell out of someone's, you know, bike shorts or, you know, bike jersey.
Don't say you picked it up. You picked it up.
Yeah, I picked it up. You would have picked it up. And I got that thing and I was like, you know, it's like half eaten. It's just covered. The thing saved me, you know, it was so, I squeezed it in my mouth and like almost burned my tongue, you know, that stuff's so hot sitting there all day.
So if someone's listening to this podcast and they just heard this story of Travis picking up a gel flask that has been partially used and covered in dirt, I want to know if anyone else out there during a race has felt so bad that they've seen a half gel packet or maybe even a gel packet that somebody's dropped on the ground, picked it up and used it. I want you to put that on social media.
I would say well over 10 times over the years. That's, you know, maybe it's water, maybe it's food, you know,
or an electrolyte tablet, right? A salt tablet or something, right? Yeah. I mean, those are gold. It's like,
you dust it off.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Dina, put us straight again, because you are the voice of reason here. Okay, we look to you for some guidance. Travis cannot be trusted. He's who knows how many races that flask has been passed by. That could have been for his own flask from a season ago. Help
it
us.
May not have been gel in there. Who knows?
Oh, it was chocolate hammer gel. It was a fire hot chocolate hammer gel ready to boil. So,
oh my gosh. Yeah, I think. You know, thinking about this whole concept of fat adaptation or metabolic efficiency, whatever term you want to give it, the occurrences of those desperate, I'm scrambling for someone else's last iota of sugar, that those number of occurrences are significantly reduced from what I've seen over the last 6 years of doing this work with endurance athletes. And to your point, it doesn't mean that you can't have sugar during a race or training. So we never want to compromise your performance, right? So I would never say to Travis or any endurance athlete, ultra runner, no matter the level of athlete, that you cannot have a gel or that you don't need to use simple sugars to fuel your body. It's just that the more fat adapted you become, the less you need to still perform well. And so that has a whole host of other consequences or benefits in terms of reducing GI distress, not getting in the way of stomach problems, you know, those scary gut bombs that do arise for a lot of ultra runners. So I think it's just important to know that if you do become, or if you decide to make your body more efficient at using fat as an energy source, it does not mean you can't enjoy some of those foods that you find at the aid station buffet.
Scott.
So I have a question for you, Dina. The typical athlete, endurance athlete that you see come in and you're doing a metabolic efficiency test on, where do they fall on the more fats, more carbs line? I mean, we absolutely know that Travis, because he's been changing his diet and his training to become more fat adapted, he was very high on there. So he probably reached, you know, his 4-minute mile pace and still burning 80% fats. What does someone normally come in? Where are they on that curve?
Yeah, great question, Scott. I mean, I can look at someone's nutrition log, you know, and just give me a few days of your nutrition. What's your typical daily nutrition? Not even knowing what their training nutrition's like. And I can get a pretty good sense if someone's going to be burning more carbohydrate than fat at very easy intensities, low heart rates, just by looking at what their daily nutrition patterns are. So that's kind of a sign and something you can just, you know, do your own assessment. And there's no exact numbers to assign to this, but certainly those that do a really good job of balancing their blood sugar levels with how they assemble their foods at breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks. So if there is a good amount of fat, we have protein, we are doing less on the processed refined carbohydrate and more of those whole food sources of carbohydrates, like vegetables and some fruits and beans and nuts and things like that. Those people tend to be better, I should say, you know, burning a higher proportion of fat, throughout the test. But I've seen every configuration imaginable, and I have been surprised a few times, where I did see, you know, what looked to be pretty good nutrition, but sometimes the training aspect does trump the nutrition. So you have to consider also stress levels and sleep and just, you know, the many factors that we all we all endure.
Does genetics play any kind of a part in metabolic efficiency?
That's a great question. You know, we haven't found yet the set of genes. We certainly are seeing some things related to gut microbiotic, the gut flora that are interesting, but we just don't know enough yet about genetics and the power of our guts, you know, what the role is yet.
You made an interesting comment just a moment ago about you may be eating right, but sabotaging yourself with your training. Can you expand on that a little bit? And Travis, you're shaking your head too. So if you want to add to it, let's let Dina go first. And if you have some thoughts, I'd love to hear yours too.
Yeah. And maybe Travis has seen this with some of the athletes he coaches. I just tested a guy who is going to run Leadville 100 this year. And he is doing his runs basically too hard. So his heart rate, according to the data that I have and according to looking at his nutrition and some of the things he's told me about his training patterns, his long, slow runs, or what is supposed to be an aerobic focused run, his heart rate is way too high. And so he's not able to reach those cellular adaptations to enhance his fat burning. And so that is playing a significant role in prohibiting him to, you know, make those next steps. So essentially we have to slow him down for some of his runs, not, you know, if he's doing hill work or things like this, we want to make sure the quality of those training runs stay intact.
Yeah. I would, you know, just to kind of second a couple of things Dina said. The first one is about variability among athletes. And I think that's a key point and something that I've definitely discovered through my years of coaching is that oftentimes, you know, people will, you know, maybe you're in the Facebook ultra running group or something like that. And, you know, so, hey, how many calories do I need per hour? Like, it's a great question. You know, when people ask me that all the time, and it's something you want to know. I mean, going into your race, you want to have a plan. How many calories per hour? That's a great thing to know, you know, and people will say, you know, oh, most women need this or most men need this or, you know, whatever. And one of the things that, you know, that I've kind of learned, like Dina said, is there is so much variability, you know, largely based on diet, you know, maybe some based on training and experience. And so, you know, my advice is, you know, probably the most involved, way to learn about this would be to do this kind of testing. You know, probably the second most involved way would be to maybe make some dietary changes, you know, do some research on your own, do some reading and see if you can make some, and it doesn't have to be an diet innovation. It could be just little shifts, you know, this kind of this Kaizen idea. I'm reading this book about Kaizen. It's like this Japanese term about making little shifts that add up to big results. And that's a great idea with diet for many people. Just do a bunch of little things, like stop drinking soda. That could, that alone, you know, maybe for some people that might make a huge difference. So, you know, like I said, second thing, dietary shift. And then maybe the third thing, and maybe the easiest, is you just got to practice, especially on your long runs. You know, try what works for you and figure out, you know, okay, what fueling sources work and how many calories per hour do you need? Not how many does, you know, someone on Facebook say you need, but how many do you need? And that's going to be unique to you. And then, you know, also backing up the second point, yes, a lot of runners, especially beginning runners, spend way too much time running too hard. You know, a lot of people start and probably a lot of people quit running because all they do is they just run really fast, right? Mm-hmm. Or really fast for them. You know, they think I'm running, so I have to run hard. And, and you know, I have to, it has to hurt. Like, you know, it has to, and, you know, I tell people, I'm like, most of the time I'm running it, like I'm, it doesn't hurt. I'm just running. I'm talking just like this. And I think a lot of people, you know, maybe they don't realize that. And it goes, there's a book, 80-20 Running, Matt Fitzgerald, I think, you know, a few years ago. And that was a great book, you know, and you know, his idea in that book is like, you know, probably you should be spending 80% of your running time in a fairly easy level, you know, zone one or two out of five. And the other 20% should be, you know, actually breathing hard, you know, and I, you know, should it be exactly 80 or 20, you know, who knows? But I think that's, you know, a decent idea and something that, you know, a lot of athletes, they're doing, you know, 90%, like Dina said, well into that all carbohydrate, you know, burning area. And they're not even working on that body's ability to, you know, efficiently metabolize fat.
I would like to put this out there, if I may, and redefine a successful run, a successful race. And that would be to finish it efficiently, to finish it without bonks, not necessarily to get your best time, but finish that race feeling like you're in control and you're not responding to the circumstances. You're not trying to survive what's been thrown at you, but you're in command. And that only happens when you get that pace at the right place, that you're eating right, that you're fueling right, you're hydrating right. All of those things have to happen perfectly.
Hey, Freeman, you're talking unicorns and rainbows. That doesn't happen.
No,
what are you talking about?
No, it could happen, and it happens in small doses. And okay, if we perfect this process, it can happen the entire race. So I'm gonna take issue with you there, Mr. War, and say it is possible. Maybe not for you. It is possible if you mind your P's and Q's. Travis, back me up here, brother.
No, I am going to back you up.
Thank you.
I think, you know, honestly, what you said does not stray that far from how I coach athletes to race and how I tell myself to race, which is kind of like I said before, you know, spend most of the race taking care of yourself. Don't try to bank miles early on. Don't try to, you know, hammer down this hill because you can catch someone. Spend most of the race taking care of yourself. And then if you can, man, that last whatever 20, 25, 30% of the race, if you've taken good enough care of yourself that you can squeeze down the screws then, you know, and then get in the racing mindset, that's when you're going to, and it's exactly what you said, you know, your goal that whole time is to, whether it's rainbows and unicorns or, you know, or just feeling good. If you can be feeling good, then that's when you have the competitive advantage, because most people slow down so much at the end of the race that if you can maintain your pace or maybe go a little bit faster or maybe just slow down less, that's when you're going to, you know, that's when you're going to have the PR or have the, you know, the age group or, you know, the podium or the, you know, whatever it is that you're going for, that's when it's going to happen. It's not going to happen because the first 10 miles you run extra fast. I can guarantee that.
Hey, Dina, I want to shift this just a little bit. So, let's take this gentleman or lady that you were discussing that said that diet was good, training was too intense, and so that sabotaged his fat burning ability. Okay. So he comes in, does the test, gets the results. You give him some recommendations. You need to train at a lower speed. How can that person determine whether they're improving or doing the right things? Do they have to come back and take another test, or are there some intrinsic things that they can feel that can say, you know what? What Dina told me to change is actually working. And wow. And Travis, we can back up with you because you've been coaching people on this too.
Scott, that's a great question. Let me throw it. Yeah. That's a great question, Scott Ward.
It is a good question. I always will give nutrition recommendations. So even though nutrition looks good, I can always, like 95% of the time, find a few things to fine tune. And so that relates to daily nutrition and perhaps training nutrition. You're consuming way too many calories, and that's why you're having stomach issues or so on. As far as retesting, I mean, that's ideal. It really is a motivator, I think, for a lot of athletes to see the hard data. It's their body. I'm not making it up, you know. That's ideal, but I understand access to the testing isn't as easy for everyone or within their budget. So some signs that we can look for would be, I mean, some of it can be just subjective. So you did your 20-mile trail run, you know, tell me how you feel, and I can look at and talk with the coach as well. I can look at the training data, heart rate, you know, all those parameters, you know, thanks to Training Peaks, there's a slew of information there. But from the nutrition side, I often will hear that, you know, I used to need the 300 calories per hour to do and get by and feel like crap at the end of this 20-mile run. And now I actually feel like I can go 2 hours into this run before I need to start fueling. I'm hydrating, but I actually, you know, got by with maybe 120 calories per hour. And at the end of this run, I feel amazing and I can do it the next day. So, you know, there are some other signs like that that we can look for. I mean, there are other things too, you guys, like body weight changes, body composition improvements, just everyday energy seems to be better the more efficient we become at using our own energy sources. So less cravings for, sugary foods, better sleep, better mood, you know, blood biomarkers look better from pre to post changes. So there really are a lot of factors that we can look at besides just doing the metabolic efficiency testing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I would, you know, I would definitely second that. Energy throughout the day, you know, not getting my entire life, I got hangry every afternoon. You know, it's like, man, it's 3 o'clock. If I don't eat, you know, a granola bar and espresso right now, like there's going to be a problem. And, you know, that doesn't happen anymore. And that's great. So that, you know, definitely for me, less inflammation has been a huge benefit of this. And that really encourages more training. You know, if you can do a long run and have less inflammation, then you can probably run more the next day. So that's big. I'll tell you another test I use often, and this is based on the work of Dr. Phil Maffetone, who maybe you guys are familiar with. Definitely a great podcast guest if you haven't had him. But, you know, he's kind of, at least to my knowledge, kind of, you know, the founder of this whole, you know, slow down to speed up kind of thing. I mean, he's doing that with, you know, guys who are my idols, you know, Mark Allen and Mike Pick, you know, these triathletes, you know, Ironman guys back in the day. And you know, he would even, I've heard him tell this story, you know, that athletes would come to him and, man, I'm running so slow. I'm embarrassed. You know, this is like the, California, like racing scene, you know, and I see it. And he'd say, well, put a mask on or run at night. And, you know, I've run in the woods by myself. So no one even knows where I am or how fast I'm going. So it doesn't matter to me. But, you know, one concrete tool that I use, often with most of my athletes and that really anyone can do at home, is called the MAF test or the maximum aerobic function test. And again, this is right from, you know, Maffetone's work. And the concept is, is pretty simple. So you pick a specified heart rate, you know, based on Moffitone's work. He might say, you know, in absentia of this kind of testing, start with 180 minus your age, you know, and get that heart rate. And I think a heart rate monitor is a great tool for, you know, working with this metabolism stuff, because it does give you some in the moment data. And I really like, you know, like any tool, it has its limitations. Don't live and die by the heart rate monitor by any means, but it's a great tool, especially for this kind of stuff. So anyway, in this test, what you'll do, you pick that heart rate and, you know, plan it out so that you'll do it on a day when your legs are, you know, rested up. They're not tired or hammered, you know, from long run or speed workout. And on that day, run a set course. So, you know, it could be, you know, maybe it's 4 miles around a track, you know, and use the same track at the same elevation. Or maybe you're a mountain runner. Like if I do it, I just have this hill by my house. It's a 2,000-foot climb, and like that's where I do it, because I always run that same trail. But do that same course that you can repeat, you know, get warmed up, run it at that specified heart rate, and write down or remember, hey, how long did this take? Right. And then you go out and you do your, you know, dietary changes, keep training, you know, whatever. And then maybe 6 weeks later, something like that, come back and do it again and run the same thing at the same heart rate and see what's happening to your time. And if you run the same, you know, route, whether it's on the track or up the mountain or, you know, from home to your office or whatever, if you're running it faster at the same heart rate, that means you're becoming more efficient.
That's good. You know, you mentioned something that I was just talking. I ran into Zach Bitter this last weekend, who is a really fat adapted runner. And he had mentioned something to me that you said just a minute ago that I never thought with this one of the benefits, and that is the inflammation. Mm-hmm. He said that his inflammation has gone down substantially. And in fact,
huge difference.
He will, after a hard, long race, he will go into this ketogenic eating pattern for the next 3 or 4 days after a race, because it keeps the inflammation down and he recovers quicker. Yep. I think that's
I agree. I do that post race as well, because I know I'm not going to be training hard. I know I'm not going to be burning any carbohydrates, like, you know, whether it's after a race or even, like I said, you know, after hard training, if I know I'm doing a few easy days, like, man, those are extra low carbohydrate days, you know, eating really clean and, you know, makes a big difference.
Dina.
That's the beauty of our hormones. I mean, that's feeding your hormones, basically. So controlling insulin levels really does correlate to inflammation. And so eating more of that lower carb, higher fat pattern tends to correlate to less inflammation. And so that's why we're seeing now, even in clinical settings, people with cancer, other chronic disease states, eating more ketogenic controls inflammation and puts that disease state in remission.
And I've got to think conditions like irritable bowel syndrome, or just, you name it, maybe plantar fasciitis, IT band. I mean, anything, right? I mean, even back pain, just things that are in and around inflammatory problems could be affected by this.
The beauty of nutrition.
Yeah. You are what you eat, is the old saying.
Interesting. So what are the tests, Dina, at your clinic, Energy, there in Boulder? What other tests do you find useful? And I just remembered a question I was going to say earlier. Is the VO2 max just a genetic measurement? I was always under the assumption that you can better your VO2 max. Is that not true?
You can better it. You can better it, but you have to work really hard to do that. Okay. And it does decline with age, right? So it's one of those kind of fun to know facts. What's my VO2 max? But the application of it in real life, I have yet to find very many coaches that use VO2 max to set up a training plan for someone. So the lactate threshold testing is usually used mm-hmm. to set performance training zones with specific heart rate zones for like your anaerobic threshold and things like that. So more performance specific.
So you don't have to use the formula 180 minus your age. It'll actually pinpoint for you as an individual where you need to be those training levels.
Those zones. Yep, exactly. And then, so we do offer the lactate threshold testing. There's so many field tests that you can do now, though. That's not as common as our metabolic efficiency testing. And then we have sweat sodium concentration testing, which could probably be a whole other podcast, to be honest.
And Dina, that's
controversy and debate about it.
You've hit it right on the head. I was hoping to get to say that. We'd love to have you back. I'm not pushing you out. There is so much to talk about, so much to learn, and you're so knowledgeable. And Travis, we'd love to get you back too. I'd love to talk about that sweat sodium concentration test, the lactic acid threshold test, and the VO2 maxes, all of these things to help us become better runners. I would love to explore those and not give them short shrift. Shrift is a word.
I don't think that's a word.
I'm going to look it up. It'll be in Scott's show notes. Shrift.
Get the dictionary.
Would you do that,
that
Dina?
Sounds good.
Because I think
have
such great stuff.
Yes, I'd be happy to.
So not to push you off, because I want to know about crossover point. Can you define what the crossover point is in metabolic efficiency testing? Because I think that is probably an important thing to talk about in this discussion.
Yeah, so in the 80s, the crossover point was known to occur somewhere between 35% and 65%. I should back up just a minute. So burning more fat or expending or using more fat as an energy source from 35% to 65% of your maximum intensity or your VO2 max. After that 65%, peak at your exercise intensity of 65%, beyond that point, your body would switch over to using more carbohydrate. So that was our classic crossover concept. And now what we've learned is that it's that crossover or point at which your body can use fat can be pushed to 90% of your maximum aerobic capacity. So, but that's the beauty of combining both a nutrition intervention and an exercise intervention. So those classic physiology studies were only looking at the influence of aerobic training and endurance training.
So if
they didn't factor in the power of nutrition.
If we're in Colorado, we can come see you or Bob Sibahar and get the exact solution we're looking for. But what should a person look for if they're not in your area, if they can't go to eenergyperformance.com and get the testing that you provide? How do we look for someone in California or name the other states? What do we do?
I think you just need to schedule a vacation here, really, is what you have to do.
It's easy to do. Yeah.
That's it.
And Travis will take you on a nice little ski tour up the mountain.
Yeah. He starts at midnight.
Yeah.
Close to the morning.
And
he doesn't bring any food.
No, that's what I was going to say. Our plan this year, me and my teammate, we're going to make sure we're far enough back in the pack that we can just pick up gels and,
use gel flasks.
Yeah, whatever we find frozen in the snow, if I can find a frozen one, it'll make up for that, that big mountain I found that one time. So.
So there are testing centers throughout the U.S. that I have approved and Bob has approved in terms of knowing they have good equipment and the staff know what they're doing. So anyone could email me for that information, or we've got a list of people who do that on our metabolicefficiency.org website. Mm. So that would be another resource. It really does come down to having a good metabolic cart, following the proper protocol, and then knowing what to do with the information. So I have had others do the testing somewhere else and then send me all of their data, and then I'll work with that person and analyze the data. And that's really helpful for me.
Travis.
And I like that.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, it definitely can be a team effort as well. You know, like I said, you know, one of my athletes has done multiple tests with Dina, and then we've collaborated and you know, I'm working on his training and Dina's working with his nutrition, but also being in touch and collaborating about that. And I think that's a key to it is, you know, just, all parties, you know, realizing the limitations of their own experience and being open to it. I mean, I think probably most coaches would be, you know, if someone out there is already working with a coach or thinking about it, you know, I think most coaches will probably be open to getting new input. I mean, I love it because I get to, I feel like I could be a better coach, you know, if I have data like that, whether it is, you know, I'd say for me, out of all those tests as a coach, you know, having an athlete, if they did the, you know, the exercise metabolism and the, you know, the salt sweat test, you know, those definitely for me as a coach, give me some concrete data of, hey, how can we apply this to your training and racing?
So we're going to do an intervention right now. Scott, you plan to run a 100-mile run in November, RDL. And so let's hook you up with a testing location. Yeah, this is TRN is going to take care of this for you.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, and Dina is going to be your personal coach on this. And Travis, do you vote yes or no on this? Thumbs up, down?
I honestly, I'm not just saying it. Like, I really think it actually would help. You know, I think you would get some good information that you can apply, you know, to your training and your nutrition. And you have, you know, the great thing is race in November, like you've got plenty of time,
right?
You know, if your race is in 2 weeks, like, you know, don't change your diet and don't get some test. Like, but people do that because you get close to a race. You're like, oh my God, I haven't done enough. I'm gonna, you know, like, don't change anything 2 weeks before your race. Like, think ahead, do some planning, you know. Do it, you know, like I said, like I did the race and then I made, you know, some dietary changes. But, you know, think ahead. And really now is a great time of year because, you know, most of the races are late summer, early fall, late fall. You know, think about this stuff now so that you can, you know, build the foundation that you want to have.
And Dina, you gave a thumbs up to that. You'll accept Scott as a client, as a subject. Okay, Scott. So it's
we just need him to get it.
We can edit this out, right?
No. There's no. It's three against one. It's a democracy. It's a democratic trail runner nation here. So you're doing it, and that'll be a lot of fun to follow and watch. And I know
I want to fly out to Boulder. I used to live out in Boulder. I want to go take the test out there. How about that?
You can do that.
You have to. Yeah.
Good.
Hey Dina, I have one question for you. You're a trail runner. You're an ultra runner. How often do you hook yourself up to the machine and test your metabolic efficiency?
Good point.
Yeah, I was doing it more often. I broke my elbow last year, so I had some downtime all last year just recovering. But I've been on maybe three times so far this year.
Wow.
I'm looking at the effect of, if you're interested, the menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. So female hormones and what a more fat adapted female would see within a monthly cycle. Because there's some other research coming out that I'm trying to show one way or the other, if it's a valid, point for some of the ultra runners.
That actually sounds like another podcast. We're lining up podcast after podcast, Dina.
That's fascinating.
That's something that I would say half of the listening audience is interested in. I really they think we be. Should explore. Absolutely, we should explore that.
Yep.
And it's important. So should we change our nutrition or our effort or our training based on the monthly cycle? Yes or no?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, but yes or no exactly.
I would say it depends.
Okay.
that's a
tease, right?
I'm going to leave a little teaser right there.
All right, let's do it. Okay, well, I enjoyed the conversation, and I know there's more to come. And Dina, if you would be willing, we would love to invite you back and do it again. Travis, you're part of the package, if that's okay with both of you.
I would love it.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Thank
Scott?
You for the opportunity.
Oh, are you kidding?
Boy, we had like five tests we're going to talk about on this podcast, and we ended up talking about one.
Yeah, yeah, we did have five different types of lab tests to discuss, and you're right. We probably got half of the one we wanted to talk about. So that's good stuff. Travis Macy, the ultra mindset. You know, we talk about nutrition, we talk about training protocols, but there's also what's between the ears, and he's written the book Ultra Mindset. We have a podcast that Scott will link in the show notes about that we can you can replay and listen to, and go out and buy the book and read it or listen
to
it.
Well, and go to Travis Macy's website, which again I'll link in the show notes. He does clinics on Ultra Mindset. Do you have any coming up in the near future?
Not right now. Mostly kind of focusing on the current athletes. You've got a couple more spots for, you know, athletes this year, 2017, and then probably in the fall we'll get back into a little more ultra mindset specific stuff. I'm working on an appendix to the book of stories of stuff I've eaten on the trail.
Very good.
Look for that 2018.
Well, trail food that you scavenged. I like it. I love it.
We'd like the chance to share that book with the audience when it comes out or before you release it. Let us get you on that podcast. Dina, how do we find you?
That'll be a coffee table photo book, you know.
Absolutely. Dina, how do we find you if we're in Colorado? We want to do some testing.
You can go to our website, which is enrgperformance.com, or email me, which the address is Dina, D-I-N-A, at energyperformance.com.
And that energy is enrgperformance.com.
Yes.
Good, good, good. Scott, wrap it up for us. You're very good at that.
I want to go run.
Right.
You're supposed to say Moss now, Freeman. Oh. Come on. I want to go run.
Moss.
There we go. You always shoot it at me, and I pull you away.
We're remote today. I'm the only one at this table. Scott's in Bakersfield, California. Dina's in Colorado. Travis, he's in Colorado as well. So we pulled this off, the four of us, all in remote locations. Guys,
with very little technical issues, I might add.
Well, we didn't listen to it. We're just talking.
It hasn't been published yet.
True, true. Guys, thanks. Go out and
that
run.
That was great.
Run. Moss. Thank you.
Moss, always a good time, guys. Thanks a bunch. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
With the audience out there. Keep it up, everyone. Keep up the hard work. Like I said, work hard now. Build your foundation. You know, you'll be ready for those ultras later on, and maybe even soon, depending on which ones you're doing.